Welcome to this week's Personal Finance Podcast. I'm Lenora Walters, and joining me today are Emma Ajimang, personal finance writer at Investors Chronicle, and Daniel Godfrey, co-founder of the People's Trust, an investment trust which is due to launch in the autumn. Daniel, can you tell us a bit about this new investment trust and what it's aiming to do?
Well, thanks very much, Lenora. The purpose behind the People's Trust is founded on a belief that the reason why people invest is to achieve what I would describe as sustainable wealth creation. And that if we look at the main part of the financial services industry and capital markets and at their business models, that doesn't appear to be the core purpose. And so what the People's Trust is trying to do is to provide a long-term savings vehicle for anyone, which is absolutely focused on long-term sustainable value creation. And we believe that by doing that, by swapping short-termism for long-termism, by swapping an inclination to panic when markets get turbulent for steadfastness and an ability to put on your seatbelt, that we can actually improve the risk-reward ratio. In other words, that shareholders who invest with the People's Trust for a long period of time may be able to look forward to better returns than they would get from most funds and most indices without having to take any additional risk. And when we look at what we've put together so far for the People's Trust, it does seem as though we are achieving the objective of having something that should be, in fact, lower risk than most funds and most markets. But again, over the longer term, we believe we can achieve what's called an improved risk-adjusted return in the long run.
Daniel, what will the Trust invest in and what will its strategy be?
Well, the People's Trust is described as a global unconstrained investment trust. So it's a company listed on the stock exchange like any investment trust, and we'll have the ability to go anywhere and invest in anything. But I can tell you what we're planning to do at start. So at our launch, we're intending to work with five equity fund managers, all of whom have been chosen on the basis of their ability, their process and their track record in managing money the way we want it to be managed, which is essentially asking fund managers to identify the companies they're most excited about in terms of their ability to create wealth sustainably over long periods of time. And by that, we're talking 5 years plus, and our own measurement period is set at 7 years. So we are working with Artemis, with Mark Nisnik, who's going to run a UK smaller companies portfolio. We're working with a French firm, a partnership called Comgest, who've been working in this style for almost 30 years to run a pan-European equity portfolio. We're working with J.O. Hambro Capital Management and one of their rising younger managers called Ben Leyland, running a global large cap portfolio. We're going to work with First State Stewart Asia, the whole team chaired by the managing partner of their Hong Kong office, Martin Lau, are going to be providing a pan-Asian, including Japan, strategy for us. And finally, we're working with Lansdowne Partners, who have a fund manager called Per Lakander, who's been running an incredibly interesting clean energy strategy there. And we've been able to get access to that strategy for our shareholders. And then finally, we have a small segment of our portfolio, initially 1%, potentially rising as high as 5% in the future, which will be run investing in what we describe as social impact enterprises. That's typically community interest companies and charities. Now, this is not a philanthropic exercise. This involves typically making loans to these community interest companies and charities, and typically to help them scale up a service they're already running, which has a successful financial model. So we're helping them get access to the capital they need to grow the services that are already delivering significant positive social impacts in some of the most deprived areas of the country, but on which they're making enough profit to pay their interest and repay the loans we make. And that element of the portfolio, albeit small, we would target a return of around 4%. So it'll be slightly less than the target return we have on the main portfolio, which is CPI plus 5%. But at the level we have, I think it will be a very, very small drag on performance, but doing something that's really a very obvious and very direct good for society.
Okay, interesting. Now, you say that you're going to measure your managers over roughly 7 years. Under what circumstances would you consider changing the managers before 7 years is up?
Yeah, so it's a really good question because, of course, you know, you could say by giving managers, which is our thesis, by giving managers 7-year contracts and telling them to go out and find the companies that they really believe can deliver over that sort of time period, the question, of course, would be, well, aren't you just giving them a free pass? And the answer to that is no. Of course, we will be talking to them regularly about what they're doing, why they're doing it, how it's going. And we do expect turnover to be pretty low. And in general, we've chosen them precisely because we think they will be successful and more successful with this sort of mandate, where they're not under pressure that if it takes 3 or 4 years for some of their investment decisions to really come through, that they're going to suddenly be fired. But the sorts of grounds on which we might terminate a contract with a manager early would be things like key person loss, things like what's described in the industry as style drift. That means where a manager starts managing the portfolio in a different way to the way in which we originally hired them. It might be change of control of the company, which of course can unsettle people. It might be regulatory implosion. So there are a number of reasons. And one other would be what we would describe as excess asset gathering. So it's definitely a feature of many funds that they can get so large that returns start being diluted. So we talk to all the managers about how much they think they can run successfully in the strategy that we've given them a mandate to run. And we might agree a capacity cap over which they wouldn't go. And then if they went out and raised a lot more money than that, that could be a reason for us to move somewhere else.
Okay, now what will your role be at the People's Trust, and how will your background and experience help you in that?
Well, I've been in the industry for about 30 years, not as a money manager, but I think in those 30 years I have seen many things that I believe are not done as well as they should be, and which I believe shortchange not only investors, but also the economy more broadly. I'm not a particularly academic person, not even particularly a clever person, but I think when you see features of the way the industry runs which you believe are wrong, it's possible to build a theory for how things could be done right. And that's what we're trying to do at the People's Trust. So my role will to be effectively the chief executive of the trust, working on behalf of shareholders to ensure that we appoint the right suppliers and to ensure that we exercise effective governance over those suppliers and support for those suppliers to help them do the best possible job. And of course, it'll be my role to ensure that we communicate with shareholders, that we answer their questions, and that we run an efficient and well-managed ship. And of course, one of the great benefits of being an independent investment trust is that all of the economies of scale as we grow go to our shareholders. And it's my job to make sure that we can secure the economies of scale as they are available.
Okay. Now, there are already a number of multi-manager funds available to private investors in the UK, including two other investment trusts, Alliance Trust and Witten. How will the People's Trust be different to these existing funds?
Well, I think both of those companies have excellent structures. And so I wouldn't say that we are going to be better than either of these. I think that it's entirely possible the way that we're all structured, that we'll all do well. And I think that's what shareholders want. You can't predict now who's going to be best over the next 10, 15, 20 years. What you can, I think, select for is companies that are setting themselves up to provide a good return for you as a shareholder over a long period of time. So I suppose the differences between us would be, in particular, for the People's Trust, that our objective is really clearly articulated, and it's articulated as saying that we aim to optimise total returns over long periods of time, whilst being very careful of not exposing shareholders to permanent loss of capital. That we are really ambivalent about short-term volatility, although as it happens, it looks as though our fund will probably have less short-term volatility than the market. And we have a very clear target, which is to deliver, as I've said momentarily before, consumer price inflation plus 5%, but measured over rolling 7-year periods. So I think that's a very clear explanation up front of what you might expect to get back. Now, it's important to put a bit more colour around that and say that that target is what you might expect to get back in a typical 7-year period. Of course, any particular 7-year period will not be typical. And so what we're additionally proposing to do is to explain after our first 7 years and then every year thereafter why we've achieved the returns we've achieved, and to explain what component of that return may have been down to luck, either good or bad, and what's been down to skill, either skill that's added value or skill that's detracted from value. And every year, on receipt of that report, shareholders will have an opportunity to vote on satisfaction or dissatisfaction with that report. And if they're dissatisfied, then the chief executive would intend to stand down and invite someone else to try and do a better job. So we're very accountable to shareholders. I think, secondly, our selection of managers, which is only 5, and the very high conviction approach we are trying to provide them with, we believe is optimising that opportunity to deliver better returns without increasing risk.
Okay, now you're actually using the same investment consultancy to select your managers that Alliance Trust used to select its underlying managers, and Witten Consults, and this consultancy is called Willis Towers Watson. But doesn't this mean there's risk of overlap, especially as you have 2 of the same underlying managers as one of those funds, namely Artemis and Lansdowne?
Well, again, that's a good question, and it's good to have the opportunity to explain that. So in our case, Willis Towers Watson have been providing us with access to their very extensive fund manager research capabilities worldwide. And as well as me having brought some fund managers to the table, which they've then analysed and given their opinion on, they brought some to us and said they believe that these match the characteristics that we are in particular looking for. So in each case, there's a somewhat different mandate. So anyone who goes online, for instance, will see that Alliance's objective is to achieve, I think, the MSCI World Index return plus 2% per annum over rolling 3-year periods. And that's really a very different target to inflation plus 5 over rolling 7-year periods. So the job has been somewhat different. So our board has selected managers that we believe can do that. And you also mentioned 2 managers who overlap. Artemis, but of course, although it's Artemis the firm overlaps, it's not Artemis the fund manager or the strategy. So that we are using Mark Nisnik for UK smaller companies, the other fund isn't. And in the context of Lansdowne as well, I believe that is a more mainstream hedge fund portfolio that's being used by the other fund, whereas we are tapping into the very considerable analytical capabilities and experience of Perlek Anders specifically to run a clean energy portfolio. So it may as well be a different firm from that perspective. We are choosing managers not just because of the individual, the firm is important too, but these are managers who will effectively be running their own portfolio. They're not subject to a house view on any of their assets.
Okay. Now, you think your ongoing charge is initially going to be 1.5%, but these days for an active fund, that's actually quite expensive. So why should new investors consider a fund charging 1.5% when, for example, they could pick up Alliance Trust of an ongoing charge of 0.54% and Witten, which is an ongoing charge of 0.79%.
Okay. Well, firstly, I'd say that when I first described the People's Trust, I said that we believed that the ongoing charge would be below 1.5%. And I think given the reputation that the investment industry is held in, I wanted to be very prudent and ensure that I didn't give one number and then come out later with something higher. So, in fact, I'm now confident that our ongoing charge will be some way below 1.5%. I don't think it will be any more than 1.3, and I would hope that we can get it down a fair bit below that. If you take Witten as a case in point, one of the differences between ourselves and Witten is that Witten pays performance fees to some of its managers. So although it has this ongoing charge ratio of 0.7 something.
0.79 at the moment.
0.79. I think you'll find if you look back over the last 7 years that quite often it's been close to
1. Well over 1% when the performance fee kicks
in. And in our case, I think we won't be very far away from that with no performance fees. And given that Witten is going to be, you know, much larger than us at outset, I think that's probably justifies my view, actually, that paying performance fees in the long run will mean higher costs. We're working with managers who we believe can deliver. We believe they'll attain the performance fees. Clearly, the managers believe that too, or they wouldn't offer them. And they believe they'll earn more money by getting performance fees. So it's something I wrestled with in constructing the People's Trust, because I've been very conscious about the level of cost and that people might point us out as having a higher charge. But in fact, my view was that whilst using performance fees would have helped me, if you like, reduce the sticker price, in the long run, it would cost our shareholders money. And so I've chosen to go with the higher sticker price because I believe it will be better value in the long run. And of course, as we grow, we will get cheaper. And we have to start somewhere. So I believe that we can deliver the returns we're looking for within these costs, and that we'll get cheaper as we get bigger.
Okay. Now, you've chosen an investment trust structure rather than an open-ended fund. Why did you go for this?
I think there are a number of reasons for that. One is that I think it's much easier for people to understand in an investment trust because they are shareholders of a listed company that collectively they own this vehicle, that it belongs to them, and therefore it really should be run for their benefit. And we can demonstrate, I believe, through our structure and governance that this really will be run for their benefit. Secondly, of course, you have a broader latitude of the types of investments you can invest in. And although at the outset we're primarily going to be investing in listed equities, we do have the small element of social impact investment. And in the future, I think it's quite conceivable that we might want to invest part of the portfolio in unlisted securities or in property development or in infrastructure, asset classes which are a good match for our 7-year time horizon.
Okay. Now, your initial public offering, or IPO as it's known, is due this autumn. How much are you hoping to raise?
Well, we're hoping to raise, I guess, 125 million plus. I think it would be viable somewhere below that. And if all the cherries line up on the machine when the handle's pulled, then maybe we could achieve significantly more than that. I think you never really know what market conditions are going to be like at the time, and how it will land when we actually publish our prospectus. But I'm pretty confident that we can get to a minimum threshold. I think it's we have a good chance to raise our target. And if we're fortunate, and if your listeners like this, and if other potential investors like the idea of an investment trust which they believe can deliver better returns for them and have a better impact on society, then perhaps we can do very well indeed.
Okay. Thank you, Daniel. A really helpful insight into your forthcoming launch.
Thank you very much.
Now, Emma, you've also been looking at investment trusts recently, including one of our IC Top 100 funds, Hickel Infrastructure Company. What does this fund invest in, and has it made good returns for its shareholders?
Hickel typically invests in infrastructure investments, including PPP, that's public-private partnership projects, such as schools, hospitals and government accommodation. And these projects tend to have very stable income. The trust has made good returns. In the year ending 31st of March, it had a NAV total return of 10.3%, which is above its target of 7-8% a year. And it also has an attractive yield of around 4%.
Okay, that all sounds good. But Hickel's actually just announced rather a large change. What is this?
That's right. The trust manager, Tony Roper, who's been running it since its launch in 2006, has stepped down. And Harry Seekins, who is a partner of the trust investment manager, Infrared, has taken over. The move has been part of a 2-year succession plan that was agreed with the board. So it's, you know, it's been in the offing for some while.
Okay. All right. So it's planned and they've got a succession in place. But should investors be worried if Tony Roper is going, can these really good returns continue to keep coming?
Well, the analysts we spoke to didn't think there was any reason to worry because the fact that this has been planned for some time. Mr. Seekins has a lot of experience and he's been at InfraRed since 1998 and he's been kind of shadowing Mr. Roper for a few years. Mr. Roper will also be remaining on HICL's investment committee and so his expertise will still be available.
Okay. Is the trust changing in any other ways?
Yes, it is. So the trust has continued the process of widening the type of assets it's investing away from the PPP projects, as a number of these new projects are dwindling. So in order to be able to widen its base, it's decided to go into more demand-based assets such as toll roads and regulated assets such as utilities.
Okay, that's interesting and a slight departure. So what would be examples of some of these other investments that it's recently put money into?
Well, a couple of examples are an American toll road called Northwest Parkway, which the Trust added last year. And recently it's also bought a water-only company called Affinity Water.
Okay. Introducing these new investments, is it all good or is it anything else that, people need to be aware of?
There's definitely, this increases the risk of the trust. It's definitely slightly higher up the risk scale than the PPP projects, which tend to have very stable, predictable income streams. With demand-based assets, that there's, like toll roads, they face economic risks. So if the economy slows down, their revenues could be hit. And with regulated assets, they come with political risks. So we've seen the Conservative Party talking about capping energy prices and the Labour Party talking about nationalising water companies. So that's definitely something for investors to bear in mind.
Okay. Now, are there any other risks that investors need to consider regarding this trust?
Yes. Due to the steady and high income on offer, this trust is trading at a high premium to NAV, which today is around 14.5%. So that's something that investors might want to look at.
That's quite a punchy rating. So is HICL doing anything to try and reduce this?
So following the Affinity Water investment, HICL is seeking to raise $205 million or up to $260 million and they will be issuing some shares at a premium to the latest dividend ex-NAV of 147p.
Okay, thank you, Emma. And you can read her full update on HICL in this week's magazine and on the website. Sticking with the subject of attractive dividends, you've also been looking at some investment trusts that have a very impressive record of increasing them. Which are these?
Yes, there are four investment trusts who've achieved 50 years of increased dividend growth, and the latest to do so is Caledonia Investments. But earlier this year, Bankers Investment Trust, Alliance Trust and City of London Investment Trust all reached that milestone.
That's really impressive. But the question is, can Caledonia continue increasing its dividend?
So the analysts we spoke to felt confident that they would on the back of continued strong performance. And the trust also has lots of reserves which it can use to cover its dividend if it were to suffer a setback.
OK, now Caledonia's investors also have something else to look forward to this year. What is this?
Yes, in addition to the increase in the normal dividend, the trust will also be paying out a special dividend of 100p.
How come Caledonia can pay out 100p on top of its existing dividend?
Well, it's due to a number of really successful realisations that the trust has made recently. Most notably, the sale of one of its holdings, a holiday park operator called Park Holidays, which generated almost £200 million. And that's one of the reasons that the trust wants to, distribute this to shareholders.
OK, now things sound like they're riding high for Caledonia, but there's something that's not so great. What is that?
Well, the trust is still trading at quite a wide discount to net asset value, which today is around 12.5%. One of the reasons for this could be because the trust has substantial exposure to unquoted investments. So that could be one of the reasons that it's still trading at such a wide discount.
Okay, so the trade-off is it might get these nice sales, but you have to put up with this wide premium. And you can see Emma's full report with the list of investment trusts that have the longest records of dividend increases in this week's magazine and the website. That brings us to the end of today's podcast, so it just remains to thank Emma Ajimang, personal finance writer at Investors Chronicle, and Daniel Godfrey, co-founder of the People's Trust. You can read more on the People's Trust, Hickel Infrastructure Company, and the investment trusts of the longest records of dividend increases in this week's issue of
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. Make a bigger impact at work with Grammarly. Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. You can even save time by going from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds. Join the 96% of Grammarly users that say it helps them craft more impactful writing. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.
Investors Chronicle and the website.